This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
That team sure did suck last night. They just plain sucked. I've seen teams suck before, but they were the suckiest bunch of sucks that ever sucked.
Steve Rosenbloom.
There was a keg stand I lost to an 81-year-old lady. She got off the ninth floor, but it was really close.
Mark Grody.
I've been waiting to get a hold of this guy for years. Channel 2 News is out there interviewing people. Yeah, I've been talking to my wife about getting Steve. He wants connected my dots and more to my blade. I'm going to dunk his ass.
They suck, so you don't have to.
Can't you morons do anything right?
Founding members of the WB Club.
Smoke weed every day.
The three words that describe this show, and I quote,
stink, stank, stunk.
It's Saturday suckage on the score.
We should be 670 WSUK.
Apologize. What is your name? I don't know who you are, the host.
Chicago! Hello! I am Mark Grody in for Steve Rosenbloom on this, at least outside of my South Loop windows, this overcast day. And I know it always sounds confusing considering the opening. I am, ladies and gentlemen, make no mistake about it, and I don't know if I should be proud of this or not proud of this, I am one of the founding fathers of Saturday Suckage and the WB Club. I once had a former Bears player say to me, come on, man, you're better than that. Saturday Suckage, WB Club. I said, I don't know. I'm not sure. But then, you know, I kind of got away from the show. But I love Steve Rosenbloom. So shout out to Stevie Sunshine, wherever he might be. Maybe he is in the sunshine. But I get to be with you today up until 12:45, that is when there will be another Cubs game. And after yesterday, we all want another Cubs game. Of course, you know that today it's baseball. It will be, gamblers, are you ready for this? It's going to be a 2-1 game today. It's just the way it works. I covered baseball for 3 years doing pre and post from 2015 through 2017. And I always remember Pat Hughes from the very beginning. You know, he'd always say when there was a 13-12 game, Mark, be ready tomorrow. It's going to be a 2-1 game. And I'll be damned if he wasn't right a lot of the time. But the Cubs do take on the Diamondbacks this afternoon at Wrigley Field. Pre-game coverage begins at 12:45. Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer will be on the call for first pitch at 1:20 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs radio network. Here's what we have going down on the show today. Mark Schanowski will be on to talk about the Bulls at 11:25. What to make of the play-in loss and what is to become of the Bulls in this offseason and what it will look like next year. So we'll get real with Mark Schanowski at about 11:25. At 11:45, we are going to get to the full Chicago-ness that was on display at Halas Hall. So Chicago-ness coming up at 11:45. At noon, can't wait. We're going to go back to Wrigley Field, live to Wrigley, and talk to Megan Montemurro of the Chicago Tribune, see what she made of yesterday and what will come today and some of the other issues with the Chicago Cubs. We'll also have some draft talk throughout the day, too. I think I slotted that for 12:25. No, we weren't going to get out of here without talking about the Bears. Don't worry. I got you. Basically, a couple of Bears segments. The Chicago-ness portion at Halas Hall, I think, will entertain you guys a little bit later on. 312-644-6767 is the number. And I think by now you probably know what happened in the Cubs game yesterday. They win the game 13-11 in dramatic fashion. And for the benefit of the few stragglers who are still like, I've been hearing about this Cubs thing. I've been locked up and I don't know what's going on. And for the benefit of the people who just want to hear it again, because every time you hear it, it sounds a little bit more impossible in terms of what actually happened in that game yesterday. And before I go through it, you know, sometimes there's some real things. We're going to get to some real things that came out of that game in just a couple of minutes. But sometimes there are just days in sports where you throw everything out. You throw out a little bit of the anger that maybe you have about the bullpen blowing things. And you just say, you're going to have, especially in baseball, you're going to have games like this. And just enjoy the moment. And it's an outlier game. You ain't going to see another game like this year, probably in all of Major League Baseball. So at some point in time yesterday while I was watching the game, I gave up. I threw my arms up and said, I shall now let what is supposed to happen, I shall let happen in this game because I can't control this. I can't control what's going to happen in this game. Rory McIlroy, I can't control what's going to happen here, so I'm just going to sit back and watch and let it happen. I'm outside in the city, walking as I do. The rain starts coming down. I don't have an umbrella. I'm just going to let the rain fall on me. I'm just going to let it happen, and I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to enjoy it. We're going to have those moments. I'm just going to be Josh Giddey. I'm just going to hurl up a shot from half court, and oh my God, I'm just going to sit back and enjoy it, and then we'll go back and look about the real things, good and bad, that actually happened in the game. So yesterday, it just happened, and you had to let it happen, and there, you had zero control over it, and guess who else didn't have control over it? Craig Counsell, any of the pitchers. It was an unmanageable day at Wrigley Field in so many ways, you know, starting with the fact that the wind was blowing out. Although I don't think either team realized the wind was blowing out until about the seventh inning. And I know that the gushes apparently got a little bit harder, but it was crazy because it was like all the hitters, all the batters seemed to be sizing up the wind and trying to do what they could do to get it up there because it's just so juicy to Major League Baseball players when they see that wind blowing out at Wrigley Field. I've talked to so many players who have come through Wrigley Field home and away about that fact that you can't help but getting caught up in that. And the idea that they're not trying to loft it is insane because that should be part of the game plan. You should get the ball up in the air when the wind is blowing out at Wrigley Field. So again, one more time, because we only have a short time to actually celebrate this game again, because there's another game coming up again at 1:20 here on the score. But yesterday, the Cubs were up 7-1 in the seventh by way of an Ian Happ grand slam and a Carson Kelly two-run shot. Arizona then scores 10. I can't control this. In the eighth inning, featuring an Eugenio Suarez grand slam off Porter Hodge. Let me stop right there, okay? Before that, before the big grand slam by Eugenio Suarez, when the Cubs had the nice cushy lead, I get this text here from my friend Sean Sears, who is one of the fine producers at The Score. And he texts me because he knows I have. And if you are a listener of me frequently, you know that I have a healthy fear of Eugenio Suarez. Again, he came in 2015. That was my first year covering the Cubs. I saw a ton of Eugenio Suarez, and every time he came up, he hit the ball hard. I don't think he ever struck out against the Cubs, ever. Not one single time. So here's what Sean Sears sends to me. 5-run lead is perfect. Suarez insurance. LOL. Me, same thing. But here's what I said. I was a little bit more pessimistic. I said that bleeper, word that starts with F, that bleeper is always lurking. Next text from Sean Sears a little bit later on. After that grand slam, unreal. So anyway, They scored 10 runs in the eighth inning, featuring that Eugenio Suarez grand slam off of Porter Hodge. And it should be noted, too, Jordan Wicks, you're on my list, man. It was Jordan Wicks who loaded the bases on 3 straight Arizona singles. We'll talk about that. 11-7 Arizona heading into the bottom of the eighth when the Cubs scored 6, featuring a Carson Kelly 3-run homer. Kyle Tucker with a 2-run blast. You enjoyed it here, Kyle? Seiya Suzuki with a solo blast. 13-11 Cubs. And then Ryan Presley. Oh, wow. Was that the best relief performance of the year for the Cubs? Just considering the way the wins were, the breakdowns of this game, and for both teams, that Ryan Presley comes in, he did give up 1 hit, but he ends up getting the win in this game. But it was something to see. Let's listen to a little bit more of the celebration here, and then we'll get into some of the real. Because Craig Counsell was smiling yesterday, right? I don't see him smiling enough. I hear him sighing a lot, but not smiling. More smiling, less sighing, Craig Counsell. Here is Craig Counsell on the comeback.
I guess if you're in there long enough, you see more and more every time. But you know, it was crazy. I mean, we gave up 10 runs in an inning and won. So it was, you know, a wild game, but you know, we kept going, and you know, there's 27 outs in a game, and you know, this kind of proves it. And you're happy just to get out with a win.
Yeah, and he admitted like they couldn't do anything right in the eighth inning. My God, what an arduous inning that was to watch. It didn't feel like they would ever get out of it. Like there was a moment where I'm sitting at my place and I'm watching the game. Like they're not this is we're going to be here for a while. We were there for a while. It was painful, and it sure did not feel like the Cubs were going to come back in any way, shape, or form. Carson Kelly, who are you, Carson Kelly? What are you doing? A two homer day. Here's Carson Kelly.
No, it was great. You know, anytime you can come up and put a good swing on it and have an opportunity to get us back in it is great. And, you know, today was a good day for it. And proud of our guys for sticking with it no matter what happens.
I'm thinking about Carson Kelly. And I think before this game, I said, could he be like a Yan Gomes for the Cubs when he had that one really good year and then it just sort of faded away and the magic ended? Is he that guy because he's kind of the backup at this point? And I know that those guys, Amaya and Kelly, you know, they're going to – I would expect that Amaya is going to play more, but who knows with the way Carson Kelly is swinging the bat. A 1.675 OPS, which leads the league right now. I love the beginnings of baseball seasons. It's stuff like this. There's always a Babe Ruth at the beginning of the season. So that I was like, is he Yan Gomes? Now I'm thinking, is he Johnny Bench? You know, like that? Is that where we're going here? 30-year-old Carson Kelly is a real something. Enjoy the moment. That's what I'm going to do here. One other piece of sound here right now, and maybe a couple more. Kyle Tucker on the moment he hit his home run.
It was cool. I mean, obviously these fans come out, you know, essentially every single game, and they pack the stadium out. So, you know, we want to come out there and win games and, you know, put on a show for them and do well. So, I mean, that's just kind of us just respecting them coming out here and supporting us. So, I mean, it was a pretty cool moment just to see everyone cheering and everything. But, I mean, overall, I think everyone was happy with the win.
Yeah, I got to say, look, Kyle Tucker's a very measured man, so that's usually his tone for everything. But one thing I noticed from a distance, just watching the post-game interviews on Marquee and listening to Zach in the post-game show, was that there was a calm. Now, I don't know what it was like in the locker room. Maybe they were losing their minds when they went in there and they were partying and they were doing the whole disco ball thing that Joe Maddon, well, who knows? Maybe they parted it up good. But they were very measured, and I think part of it is I don't know if those guys knew what hit them. Like that is one that you have to process. And that's what I'm doing right now. That's what I was doing yesterday. So I think that there was a processing, there was a shaking of the head, because there was also a lot of things that went wrong in the game for the Cubs. So that is part of it, I think. But I think it was the right tone and the right approach, and we'll take care of the hyperbole here on our ends. But the Cubs win that game 13-11 to improve to 13-9. Here's a little bit of the reel that came out of that game now and going forward. And I talked about this yesterday on the midday show with Marshall Harris. And boy, Cubs did not do much to make us feel better about the third base situation yesterday, did they? You had Vidal Brujan starting. I think I like Vidal Brujan. I could tell like he's very excited, energetic. Like he's like I like those kinds of guys. However, he made an early error, on which I felt bad because okay, here is this because Craig Counsell said yesterday it's going to kind of be this platoon. You're going to see rotating third baseman. If you are capable of playing on the dirt in Major League Baseball, you may get a shot at third base. And so Brujan gets in there. He makes an error. It was a really strange error too. Because he made a nice play jumping in front of Dansby Swanson at shortstop, which was the right play, scooped it up on a short hop, and then had the ball in his hand. And it was almost like a magic trick. The ball just dropped out of his hands before he even threw the ball. It had to have felt weird. And so, okay, let it go. But that, oh man, if you're getting that first shot trying out for third base, that's tough right there. And then he did strike out with the bases loaded and nobody out looking. So I'm like, ugh. Because, these are the things I'm watching. Gage Workman, did they ever give him an error for that? That the Gage Workman, the two-run error at third?
He was not credited with an error on that play.
Are you serious?
Dead serious.
Everybody. Wow. Tyler Farringall, ladies and gentlemen. The Boog and JD. And look, you're always going to get the benefit of the doubt from the guys on Marquee. Both of them thought it should have been an error. After the post game, they thought it should have been an error. Everybody was saying, Craig Counsell said it should have been an error. So, all right. Good for you, Gage. I'll stop talking about it. So the official scorers, if they're listening, are like, huh, what the hell is Grody talking about here? Didn't like to see that from Gage Workman. So it couldn't have been a worse day in terms of that kind of stuff. As a matter of fact, let's listen to, here's a little bit of Craig Counsell from yesterday, specifically speaking about the third base situation.
I think you're going to see a number of players play there, yeah. We've got, interestingly, every day we got kind of four choices at third base. I don't think we have so you're going to see different guys there frequently. So we're just kind of looking at matchups, and today the best day was best choice was Vidal.
Can someone outright win it?
Of course, yeah. I mean, yeah, absolutely. I think we're going to use platoons, though. I think that's the most logical thing that'll happen, and most likely thing that'll happen.
Good to hear. The code that I'm hearing is yeah. I mean, the idea is brought up by Bruce. Can somebody? Yeah, sure. Not convincing. The Cubs need to go out and get a third baseman. They have to go out and get a third baseman. They've already sent one down. You have a situation where, look, maybe Vidal Brujan's going to be great. Maybe Gage Workman is going to be great. But at the beginning of the season, not getting Alex Bregman was why I couldn't get the Cubs to 90 wins. They have to go. I'm not saying today. I'm not saying tomorrow. But eventually, as things start to shape up in the league and you start to see the teams that have talented third basemen that maybe are not going to do damage in the postseason, yeah, you have to go out and get that guy. If this is an all-in must-win season, then you have to act accordingly, and I'll be super disappointed if the Cubs don't. I can handle this for a while, and I think that's what the Cubs are saying. I think they're saying, hold on, just be patient. We're trying to figure this out. We're going to do this rotation, but I promise you, Jed Hoyer and his team of guys are looking for a third baseman because they have to have a third baseman on this team if they are serious about winning this season. I want to give out a couple of attaboys to a couple of guys in the game yesterday because this stuff gets away from you in a game like that. Caleb Thielbar preserving a 2-1 lead in the fifth. I talked about Ryan Presley. He may have been the MVP of the day yesterday. Somebody had to stop somebody. and he done did it. Talked about Carson Kelly. And then, oh, man, see, this almost got away from me. Hey, Colin Ray, I see you throwing 95 out there. Wow. 4 2/3, allowed one run. I guess I got to give some credit to Corbin Burns as well. Not you, Suarez. I see you looking at me, Suarez. Hey, Eugenio Suarez. Don't look at me like that. I should probably one of these days take a microphone out to Wrigley when Eugenio is here. I guess this is the opportunity. He won't be coming back again. And just talk to him. Maybe I need to work through my issues with Eugenio Suarez at some point in time. But we will talk more about the Cubs later on. As a matter of fact, we're going to go to Wrigley Field with Megan Montemurro at noon. And she will tell us all of the delightful things that are going on out there today, including Zach Gallen against Ben Brown. Quickly on the White Sox, they lost to the Red Sox yesterday 10-3. Trevor Story, man, even though the White Sox took 2 out of 3 from Boston in Chicago, which was awesome, Trevor Story, I think he hit the ball hard every single time he came up against the White Sox in that series. And then yesterday he hit a pair of three-run homers. I saw Andrew Benintendi hit a home run. That's right. I watched the White Sox game. Andrew Benintendi hit a home run yesterday, which had to be cool for him being back in Boston. And I'm sure that he needed that warm fuzzy considering the organization for which he is playing right now. And today we got the rematch. 3-10 today, Shane Smith against Garrett Crochet. Of course, Garrett Crochet took the no-no into the eighth at the rate last time around. Shane Smith, not too shabby. He's a good – he's one of those guys, like, worth watching on the White Sox right now. So the rematch is today. This time it will be Boston-style 3-10 start for the Chicago White Sox today. Like I said, we'll return to some baseball in a bit. But first, we eat. No. We will be talking about the Chicago Bulls next and the 109-90 rude elimination from the play-in game. We will bring in one of my favorites, Mark Schanowski, to talk about the Bulls. I'm Mark Grody on The Score.
That's the goal. A shrinking timeline is basically to have a faster turnaround. But I think there's a lot to like about this young roster. I think they've showed it, the second half of the season, and we're going to try to add pieces and get better for next year, and especially in the Eastern Conference.
That is the Bulls boss. He is the president of basketball operations, and he is Arturis Karnišovas, remaining steady in terms of his press conference in the face of a lot of tough questions. Understandably, a lot of tough questions as the Bulls' season ends badly. They lose to the Heat by a final score of 109-90 in that play-in game, third straight year that the Chicago Bulls have been eliminated by the Miami Heat. And so it is a 39-43 season for the Chicago Bulls, ninth in the East. They may have discovered some things, but again, the Bulls are in a strange place. And with more on the Chicago Bulls, always a pleasure to bring in my buddy Mark Schanowski to talk about these Chicago Bulls. Mark, what is going on, man? Thanks for coming on the show here.
Mark Grody, how are you? You got your big week coming up with the draft. Looking forward to it.
Oh, yeah, man. We are all about the draft. Every time I go into the radio station, I'm like handed a sheet of paper, read this promo, read that promo. I think we've got like a big Zoom meeting on Monday. As a matter of fact, Mark, I'm glad you brought that up because I will be, along with Anthony Heron, performing a draft preview show right here on The Score Monday night from 6 o'clock until 9 o'clock. How you like me now? Who do you think the Bears are going to draft, Mark, or what position?
Yeah,
you got,
really
you got a position?
Before we get into that, you use the word performing. It's like you're going to be doing a magic act. You're going to make NFL front office disappear or something.
I am now able to juggle.
As far as the draft, I'm very much in favor of them going for an offensive tackle. I think that, with Braxton Jones coming back from the injury, there's a little bit of uncertainty over whether he's going to be 100% healthy at the start of camp. But I think that you really want to fortify that position. So I would go for the best offensive tackle on the board.
I like it. That is the voice of Mark Schanowski. Let me give him the proper introduction. He is the sports anchor and reporter for ABC7 right here in Chicago, play-by-play voice for the Windy City Bulls, co-host of the Gimme the Hot Sauce podcast with Stacey King. So he does a lot. He is on X at Mark Schanowski is the way that you can find him. What did you think while you were watching that Bulls Heat play-in game the other day?
I couldn't recognize the team. You know, they had played so well the last 6 weeks of the season, and they had, you know, kind of mastered the style of playing up-tempo, shooting a lot of threes, really trying to wear out the opposition. And in this game, you know, which is a, you know, an NCAA tournament style, win or go home, they came out really flat. No defensive intensity, bad communication. It was just like an eye pass to the rim in that first quarter. And before they woke up, they were down 20, and it was almost impossible to come back.
You have two really good coaches going in this game. Eric Spoelstra, we all know about that. Billy Donovan as well. Did Billy Donovan have a bad game?
I wouldn't necessarily put it all on Billy. You know, when your team comes out flat, a lot of times, you know, you talk about a coach trying to fire up his team, especially you hear that in football, maybe a little bit lesser in basketball, to get people at an emotional pitch to play at their highest level. And I just think that the players, you know, Coby White said very candidly afterwards that we had no game plan discipline. We didn't really listen to what the coach said. And when one of your star players comes out and saying we didn't follow what the coaching staff said, you know, you kind of have to put that on the players.
Well, I mean, that scares me a little bit if that's what he's saying, if they're not listening to the coach. I mean, because this is something I've been thinking, like, in my head. Like, Billy Donovan just has been told that he's going into the Basketball Hall of Fame. He's one of the great coaches, and justifiably. But it doesn't necessarily mean that he's the right coach for this team. So I don't know if this is a one-time thing, if they're tuning him out. But that scares me a little bit, Mark.
Well, and Josh Giddey also said after the game that they came in a little bit overconfident because they had swept the regular season series 3-0 against Miami. They had just beaten them the week before at the United Center, and they thought that they kind of knew what the formula was for beating Miami. But Eric Spoelstra is one of the best coaches in the league, and he came out with a different game plan. He showed the Bulls some things they hadn't seen during the regular season, and they were slow to adjust. You know, they were down, I think, like 17 at halftime. And in the third quarter, Miami couldn't make a shot. They only scored 17 points. And the Bulls had a chance to get back into it. I think they got as close as 9 at one point, but they also couldn't shoot it. They were, I think the third quarter was like 21-17 in favor of the Bulls. But if they had made some shots, they could have made that a game. It just was a situation where they got behind, panic kind of set in, and they never really did make a legitimate run at it.
Let's move to the big picture. And you're right about that. In the second half, I thought they were going to come back. It looked like it. The crowd was into it. They were due. It's the NBA. Everything was moving in
everybody
the direction.
Everybody makes a run, yeah.
Everybody makes a run, even though Stephen A. Smith was telling the world that the Bulls were cooked, and I was like, let's prove this guy wrong. But listening to AK, there were some things that he said, and I know everybody was pissed off listening to Arturis Karnišovas. It seems like they're always pissed off listening to Arturis. But he was right that they did manage to develop a style of rebound and run this year, of getting to shooting three-pointers, a more open style of basketball that I think that this team and maybe this organization has been desirous of for a while, but not having, you know, DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine around anymore. So they were able to do things like that. They did develop some players as well. But the question is, and I was debating this yesterday with Marshall Harris on The Score in the midday show, did the Bulls mess this season up because they're 39-43 and they didn't really do a lot in terms of trying to tank like other NBA teams do? So did they mess up this season?
It just depends on your perspective. Obviously, it was an organizational decision that starts at the top with the Reinsdorfs and filters down through the front office and the coaching staff. You know, it's very important for them to want this team to be competitive, to put on a good show at the United Center. You know, they always lead the league or are near the top of the league in home attendance, and they want to have an entertaining product for the fans. So they decided that rather than tear it all the way down, they would try to change the style of play. They would play faster. They would change the shot profile. And their feeling was that would be an entertaining style of basketball for the paying customer. The problem is, with so many good teams in the NBA now, with so many young stars in the league, they've kind of fallen behind. You know, the two guys that they had that were all-star caliber in Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan, they got rid of one last summer, and they traded Zach midseason. So they had a collection of young players, many of them talented, but not experienced or having a high enough profile to carry you to where you want to go. They are stuck in the middle. You know, no matter what the front office might say, that's exactly where they are. And barring some really unforeseen trade, they're going to come back with largely the same roster. And I would hazard a guess that they'll probably be in that 7-10 range again next season.
Do you think that they will, though? Do you think that Arturas Karnišovas and Mark Eversley will be looking for ways to bring in a superstar at this point? Or do you think that they are steadfast in this group, this core, which appears to be Josh Giddey, Coby White, and Matis Buzelis?
Well, you know, I want to thank you for the kind promo you gave us for the Give Me the Hot Sauce podcast. And we, Stacy and I, had AK on the show about a month ago. And he said something that kind of surprised me, and I know you reiterated it, but not as strongly in his end of the season remarks, where he said that, you know, they're really looking at 2026 free agency, that they want to make sure that their books are clean so that they can go out and pursue some of the top stars that are going to be on the market. It's supposed to be a really good class, but as we know, if we see it in all sports, guys that are projected to be free agents oftentimes signed extensions, and then they're no longer on the market. So it's a dangerous game to try to project, you know, more than a year out and say, well, in July of 2026, we're going to make our move. You know, you've got another season before that. Guys will sign extensions. There will be injuries, and you don't know what that class is going to look like. Plus, a lot of the top free agents in 2026 are older players, you know, potentially guys like Kevin Durant and LeBron. And, you know, you're not going to rebuild a team with an aging superstar. You know, they need somebody who's in their prime. And that's why I think they're going to probably look to the trade market this summer to see if they might be able to shake out a disgruntled star who's looking for a change of scenery. The one name that always pops up is Zion Williamson, but he's been hurt so much in his career. You know, he's only 25, but he's missed more than half the games in his career because of a variety of injuries. He's such a dynamic athlete and a prolific scorer when he's healthy, but that's the key phrase, when he's healthy. And the Bulls, after going through what they did with the whole Derrick Rose saga in the mid-teens, I'm not sure they have the stomach to try to bring in a star who's always injured.
Yeah, yeah, that would be tough. I mean, people would love him here when he's playing because he is fun to watch. And now you got me thinking here about what it would take to get somebody like that. I mean, obviously, Patrick Williams, but he just signed a contract. Vucevic, he's under contract still with the Bulls, right? So that's
a
guy.
He's got one more year, but I don't think New Orleans would have any interest in bringing in Vooch at 35 okay. with 1 year left on his deal. I think they, you know, and again, this is just spitballing. I have no inside knowledge on it, but the Bulls and Pelicans have done business before. You know, they did the Lonzo Ball trade, the sign and trade deal that brought him here to Chicago originally, although they do have a new front office now with Joe Dumars replacing David Griffin. But Dumars may want to try to build this team in his image, and maybe he looks at Zion as a depressed asset that maybe we're better off to cash in now. You know, if you're going to make that kind of a trade, they'd probably want either Coby White or Giddey, and then I'm sure you could throw in Patrick Williams to balance the salary, and then you'd have to give him a first-round draft pick or two. It'd be a huge price tag to bring a 25-year-old Zion Williamson in here, but that's the kind of move the Bulls have to think about, because they're going to pick, you know, most likely they're going to pick 11th or 12th in this draft. And, you know, they'll get a player, a rotation player, a nice player, but not someone who's going to change the franchise. I do like Matis. I think Matis is going to be a really, really good player. Maybe even to the point of being an all-star caliber player. He's got all the skills at 6'10", a good ball handler. He's improved his outside shooting. And, you know, he's fearless. I think that he's a good guy that you want to have as part of your core. I think they'll re-sign Josh Giddey to a long-term deal this summer. And he showed late in the year what he can do as a 22-year-old point guard who's, you know, a guy that's a threat to put up a triple-double almost every night. And then, you've got a lot of questions. You know, how do you build around those two guys? Coby White has another year on his deal, and then he'll be looking for big money. So it's not it's quite the balancing act they're trying to figure out. You know, AK talking about cap space in 2026, let's say you give Josh Giddey $30 million a year this summer, and you give Coby White, let's say, $35 million a year next summer. Well, all of a sudden, you've eaten up a good chunk of that cap space.
Yeah. And that's the one thing. I mean, the money stuff is real. But one thing that you alluded to was the, you know, potentially doing the big business in 2026. And maybe by then, Now, Modest Buzelis, he's not a star yet. He showed signs of it. He was in an encouraging rookie year, so who knows where he develops to the point where it really looks maybe he will be a star. And that is interesting. Is there any, like, do you think that Giddey being a restricted free agent, do you think he's going to get any kind of crate? Could there be a team out there that overbids for Josh Giddey? And if they did, should the Bulls stick with it?
Well, the only team out there that has significant cap space is the Brooklyn Nets, and I don't see them making a massive offer sheet to Josh Giddey. They have, you know, they're in the early stages of their rebuild, and I don't know that they look at Josh Giddey as a kind of franchise point guard that they could build around. But you never know what they're thinking internally with their roster. I don't think that they would put out a big offer sheet just to spite the Bulls, because, you know, if the Bulls don't match it, then you're stuck with a max contract for a guy that maybe you don't think deserves that. So I don't think the Bulls are too worried about Josh getting a huge offer as a restricted free agent. But I also think that, you know, as we saw with Patrick Williams last year, they signed him right away when free agency opened and didn't see what the market was going to bear for Patrick Williams. I think this time around, maybe they'll be a little more cautious and not bid against themselves. Hopefully that, you know, they saw with the Patrick Williams negotiation, if there's not a number of teams out there that can drive up the price, you should try to get the guy at somewhat of a team-friendly deal.
I would encourage everybody to listen to the Gimme the Hot Sauce podcast with the guy that we're talking to here right now, Mark Schanowski, and Stacey King as well. You can catch Schanowski on ABC7 in Chicago as well. Mark, it is always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for making some time on a Saturday, man.
Mark Rohde, I appreciate it. I look forward to your draft coverage throughout the week. Score is the place to be, and you know, it's going to be a fun week for Bears fans, and hopefully we get some exciting Bulls news this summer.
Amen, brother. Take care, Mark. That is Mark Schanowski once again talking about the Chicago Bulls here. When we return, let's talk about the Chicagoness that was going on at Hallis Hall a couple of days ago. I'm Mark Grody. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Let's get back to more Mark Grody on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
What's up, everybody? I have been at Hallis Hall this week, got to meet all the assistants, the position coaches, the coordinators. The Bears rolled out the red carpet for us and gave us an opportunity to talk to a bunch of the assistants. And oh boy, it's good to see Antoine Randall L. as the Bears wide receivers coach. He did the same thing in Detroit under Ben Johnson. But Antoine Randall L., he is from Riverdale, Illinois. He played I remember him very well, playing high school basketball at Thornton with Melvin Eli and Napoleon Harris, who went on to play linebacker, and the Northwestern kid. I was very in tune with that stuff because at the time in my career, I was working downstate covering high school basketball and high school football with all those hyper-talented Peoria teams and some of the Springfield teams. Remember Marcus Griffin at Peoria Manual, went on to play at Illinois. Frankie Williams, Sergio McClain, and his dad Wayne McClain, who was the head coach of those awesome Manual teams. So I got to know him pretty well. And then he was an assistant with Illinois as well. So that's kind of where I was coming from. But oh my goodness, I played some of the Chicagoness of Antoine Randall L. On the afternoon show the other day with Lawrence and Matt. I would like to unveil the rest of it. I think if you are from the area, you're going to love hearing from one Antoine Randall L.
I'd like to be here wearing a Bears hoodie and being back to Chicago.
It is pretty cool. Yeah, I can't express it enough just being back and being in the Bears hoodie. It's pretty cool. And it's just, you know, growing up and watching the Bears and rooting for them when we're not playing them type deal. So it's always been a thing for me to get back here, and the way it happened was pretty good. So I'm excited, and I'm thankful more than anything.
You talked about being excited that you're back here. People in your life who are still here, reaction?
So I see my parents twice a week. it's been really good. I try to see them more, but it is an hour and 20 minutes, whatever it's away. And with work, that's tough. It's going to be even tougher when my wife and kids get here, because the kids got games, and I'm still dating my wife. With 23 years, we are still dating. So it means a lot. But it's exciting to be back here. I got a 96-year-old grandmother. I got an 85-year-old grandmother. Like, I got some folks here, and it's great. And that's just the family. A slew of uncles and aunts and cousins, so they're very excited as well, along with some friends. But for me, I still got a wife and I got kids and I got a job, so I got have some borders and boundaries that go along with that. But it's good. It's good. It's going to be some things that we can make in terms of events that we just couldn't make as it relates to the family and stuff like that.
Can the folks drive to you, or do you have to go to them?
Well, they can drive to me, you know, to the games, and we gonna have stuff at the house like we've always done, you know. But I got to be careful because I got some cousins. It'd be 6 a.m. They'd just be knocking at the door. And I still love them the same, but that's my fan. It's gonna be a good time. That's for sure.
Are you the best basketball player still in this building right now?
Well, right now, I have not won a jump shot contest yet. Yes, I've lost, so I'm like 0-for-4 or something. But that'll change because I've been working out and lifting, so I'm going to blame it on that. I'm going to make an excuse this one time.
There's a hoop in the locker room usually.
Well, we got one over in the turf, you know, a couple of coaches. We go out there and try to get out there a little bit, just shooting.
Okay.
You know. Now, if we put the ball on the ground a little bit, then it'd be different. No shot. But
What are your core memories as a Bears fan, as a kid? What do you remember most?
I always remember the Super Bowl shuffle. I remember that, and I just remember the fridge, and like for me, it was it's like I was a Willie Gault. I was the Gentry. Like I had a chance, and we played Tecmo Bowl with those guys, so it was a big deal. So those are the memories. Really, was the Super Bowl years, and even coming up, like it was just like, man. Because I always wanted to go pro and whatever came first as it relates to the sport. And, you know, I'm like, man, could I have a play for the Bears? Like, that was always a deal. Now, that didn't happen. It almost happened somewhere between there, but I ended up going to Washington. But anywho, man, it's always been just going up and watching them. It's that Super Bowl and the shuffle and all that stuff and singing it and hanging out with it was always a good deal.
You've accomplished a ton in your career. Was there any bit of – when you first walked in here, did you allow yourself to be sentimental about?
I had to try not to because I wanted to get, you know, focused and locked in. But it just catches up with you, you know, just in terms of like it was just not weird. It was just like, oh, man, this is really happening. Like, this is it. So I would say not sentimental. It was just so cool. Like, this is it. And, yeah, so, I mean, that's as far as it went. Had to shut it off to kind of get focused, because, like I said, we got a lot of work to do.
I got to tell you, that's Antoine Randall L., the Bears wide receivers coach. When he was asked about his memories growing, he's 45, so he was really young for the 85 Bears. And I think, okay, he's playing the hits here. He's at the fridge and the Super Bowl shuffle, but then he mentioned Dennis Gentry. I'm like, okay, he gets it, because. You remember Dennis Gentry, man? He Pinky is what they called him, and he was like the do everything guy on the offense. So loved Dennis Gentry. It's interesting too. Like, that's all fun and good stuff. What he said is true though. There's going to have to be borders and boundaries. There is a tough part of coming home as well, and I don't think he'd have it any other way. But that's an important part. I love he's talking about his cousins and his uncles and all that kind of stuff. I love cousins. Shout out to all of my cousins. Cousins are awesome. And then the real stuff, real quick, because we got to get it back out to Wrigley Field here in a second. Some of the things he was saying too, like he said that he had his favorite receiver in the draft last year was Rome Odunze. So that's a big deal. That's a big vote of confidence, and his development is crucial. So there's a fun part here for Antoine Randall L., and there's a real part here for Antoine Randall L. He and Ben Johnson got to make Rome Odunze into a player, and it appears that Rome's on that trajectory. He got really excited, did Antoine Randall L., talking about DJ Moore. And I'm thinking he might see a little bit of himself in DJ Moore as a football player. Just because, like, they started to figure out better ways to use DJ Moore about 7 games into the season, it felt like. Give this man space to do work. If you throw a screen pass to him, hand the ball off to him, give him the ball at the 2 yard line, let him cook. It's one of the it's one of the great DJ Moore tricks. Yeah, he'll make some plays down the middle. He'll make some deep plays. But the one of the best ways to use DJ Moore is put him in space and let him work. That's what he does. He's not the big, tall wide receiver, go up and get it guy. He's a worker on the inside. So make that work for an entire season, and you have to get chemistry between those two guys, Caleb Williams and DJ Moore, and all of these coaches are going to have to conspire to make things like that happen. Got to take a break. When we come back, though, we are going to Wrigley Field. Will there be an encore to what we saw yesterday? Megan Montemurro from the Chicago Tribune joins us next on The Score.